And we're holding on page 88 in Sobus Oislamid Tess. We started learning yesterday about Shoichad, about a Dayan is not allowed to take any form of Shoichad. We talked about even, for example, things such as taking a fee for judging a Din Torah is not so simple. So now continuing on that topic, the Gemara says, Tanan Abanan, v'shoichad lo yisitach. When the Pasuk says, don't take a bribe, ein sarach loima shoichad mamin. That's needless to say that a dayan can't take a bribe of money. Ela, filo shoichad dvorim nami osur. Even shoichad of words or of things would also be osur. For example, a compliment, or for example, some examples that the Gemara is going to give over here of a minor favor is also osur. And the reason is because many times when the Torah speaks of shoichad of monetary gain, many times it uses the word betza for it. Like for example, when Yehuda says to his brothers, "Ma betza ki nayar gesachinu." If instead the Torah is choosing over here the word shoichad, then that implies even an intangible gain. We learned yesterday also when the Gemara had said Shoichad Shehu Chad, Ben Yoyada points out a similar thing over there. What brought the Gemara to that drasha? That is because the same thing. Why doesn't it say Betza? So the fact that he picks the word, the fact that the word for it is Shoichad, teaches us that concept Shehu Chad, that it makes them like one. But here we're saying, in addition, Shoichad can even be of words or of minor actions. So the Gemara says, "Hechi dami shoichad dvarim." What are some examples of that? Now you have a machlokas as far as these few examples that the Gemara is going to give us over here and other similar ones. Are we talking about they would actually? It's actually daraisa that the dayan is actually posel mitzad din to judge when one of these things happens. That's how the Rambam learns. On the other hand, Tosfos says that no, it's not mitzad din. It's the amaroyim that we're going to describe over here were machmer on themselves. Anyway, the first example, Ki hada Shmuel have a over b'mabra. Shmuel was one time crossing over a bridge. Osa hu gavra yohiv lo yode. A man came by and gave him his hand to help support him while he's walking. Omale maya vittach. So Shmuel asks him, "What brings you here?" Literally maya vittach would mean, "What's your business?" Omale dina isli. So the man says, "I have a din Torah." Amalei, so Shmuel tells him, "Pasil nul chaladina, I'm posel, I'm recusing myself, I'm making myself posel to judge your case because you helped me out over here, and that's a form of shoichan." Again, according to the Rambam, he's actually required up yalocha to recuse himself. According to Tosfos, it's only midas chasidus. Another example, Amemer have a yosef a kadoin dina. Amemer was one time sitting and judging a din Torah. Or judging Dine Torah in general, Porach Gadfa Reshe, a feather came and flew onto his head. Also, who gavra shakle, and a person came by, one of the people in the base in Shtilbo over there took it off his head. Omale Maya Vidach, Amemer asks him, "What brings you here?" Omale Dina Isli, and the man says, "I have a Din Torah." And the same thing, Omale Pasil Mil Choladina, Amemer also says, "I'm posel to judge you Din Torah. Because I might, it's a minor thing, you took a feather off my head, I might have a certain bias towards you." A third example, Ma'ukva have a shoddy ruka kame, there was saliva lying on the ground in front of Ma'ukva. Also, who gavra kasye, a person comes along and covers it. Omale Maya Vidach, and Ma'ukva asks him, "What brings you here?" Omale Dina Isli, and the man says, "I have a Din Torah." Omale Pasil Nol Choladina, and Ma'ukva says, "Then I'm posel to judge your case." Some minor little favors like that, nevertheless, are enough to posel a dayan, are enough to make that a dayan should recuse himself from a case. Another example, Rabbi Shmuel, a more complex example, Rabbi Shmuel, but Rabbi Yossi. Have a rogel arise, Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi. There was his oris, his sharecropper, who would take care of his fields and orchards for whatever and everything for him, and he would get a percentage of the crop. That's a kind of an arrangement. It's called an oris. So this oris who worked for Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi had a regular practice to have a maisele komale shabsa every erev Shabbos. The guy would bring him kanta de peri, a basket of fruit from Rabbi Shmuel's orchard. So this way, Rabbi Shmuel would have fruit covered Shabbos. Yoimachad Aisile Beheba Shabbos. So one time, instead, the guy brings the basket of fruit on Thursday. Amalei Maishna Ha'idna. So Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi asked him, "Why is it different this time?" Amalei. So the man says, "Dina Isli, because I have a Din Torah. Va'amina. So I figured, Agav Orchoi, as while I'm here anyway in town for the Din Torah, Aisile Lamayr. Then let me bring it to you, Rebbe. The Bati Dinim generally sit on Monday and Thursday." So therefore, so he's in town anyway on Thursday to go to Basin. Amalei pasilna l'chaladina. So Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi says, I am possible to judge you. I skipped. Loi kabel minei. Rabbi Shmuel did not want to take the basket from him. Amalei pasilna l'chaladina, and he says, I'm possible to judge you. Now he could have taken the fruit. The fruit itself does belong to him, but nevertheless, he figured that there's still the possibility that he's going to be that just the taking it itself is going to cause him to be biased in his favor, as we'll see in the continuation of the story. Whether that means that he told the guy, come back with it tomorrow, or whether he means whether it means that he didn't accept it at all, doesn't say one way or the other. Anyway, Oisiv Zuza Dirabanan, so Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi himself is not going to judge the Din Torah. He set up a pair of Chachamim, Vekodainin Le, and they're judging the guy's Din Torah. Now, why a pair? Marsha points out, a Beis Din is supposed to be three. So he gives two possibilities. One possibility is that Rabbi Shmuel is not completely recusing himself from the Din Torah. He's just saying, I can't be the only Dayan. In principle, a Dayan can judge by himself. Now, it does warn in Pirkei Avos, Alti Don Yechidi, Shein Don Yechidi Ela Echad. Nevertheless, a Dayan is allowed to. But here, Rabbi Shmuel figures I might be biased in his favor. So therefore, let me instead we'll have a Beis Din of three. I'll be only one of the three members. So then fine, even if I am biased towards him, the other two Dayanim are not, and I'll end up getting outvoted, and therefore there's no problem with it. The other possibility, Marsha says, is that it means that it's true, of course, one person can judge. What he does is he figures like this. He wants to see, I'm going to have two people sit down and do the Beis Din. Now, let's see. Right now, I'm thinking that this artist has a good claim. Let's see if those two think the same way. If they do, then I can realize that, yeah, my judgment hasn't been affected by this guy offering me the basket of fruit. But if I see that the two of them are deciding that he is, in fact, liable to pay, and I'm thinking that not, then it shows that the attempted shoychad had a certain effect on me. Therefore, Marshall says he Dafka didn't do a Beis Din of three, because then with three, you never know. You might have... In Masechta Sanhedrin, it was in Daf Yomi a few days ago, talks about a Beis Din in general, where if there's a split vote, they don't write, they don't necessarily publish who said what. They just say in general, the Beis Din Pliny has decided the case so and so. So with three Dayanim, you're not going to know how many of them decided one way and how many the other. So they're judging the Din Torah. Bahadi de Ka'ozov Ossi, as Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi is walking back and forth and overhearing what's going on during the Din Torah, Oz Omar, he thinks to himself, I boy toin hochi. You know, this Oris, he could, if he wanted, he could make this claim, or he could make that claim, because Rabbi Shmuel is thinking of all kinds of possible claims, migos, and all kinds of other things like that the guy should say. All of a sudden, he catches himself. He says, "Omar," he says, "Tipach nafsham shom akablish shoychad." Look at that. The soul, the desires of people who receive shoychad should be tipach. Means they should be in pain. They should be disappointed and in agony. Uman ishalay natalti. Consider madoch. I didn't even take the shoychad. The im natalti shalay natalti. And the fact is, even if I did take it, I'd be perfectly entitled. It came from my own orchard. Kach, and still it's so that I'm so biased in his favor that I'm thinking of all kinds of arguments he could have said. Mekabel shoychad alachas kama vakama. How much more so people who actually take shoychad. Meaning, in other words, Marsha says, as we learned yesterday, you're not even allowed to take shoychad, even to judge truthfully. So he's saying people are going to think you can take shoychad and you're still going to be able to judge truthfully, because after all, like we talked about yesterday, you can have a case, an open and shut case, where it's clear that the person is in the right, and nevertheless, and people think then there's nothing wrong with taking shoychad, and Rabbi Shmuel is saying, look at that, you can see from my example that it's not so. The brief actually adds a point that, after all, Rabbi Shmuel figured, now we said before, he didn't take the basket, even though he could have, because it's after all his fruit. He realizes to himself, you know what, it's bad enough now, I didn't take it, and I'm still biased in his favor, and I'm thinking to myself good arguments that he could have made it based in. If I had taken the fruit, it might even been even worse. I might have actually spoken up and said things that he could argue and based in, and he can't do that. The Dayanim are not allowed to go in favor one person versus the other and act like his lawyers and based in. Similarly, the Gemara tells another example. Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha, who, as we know, was a Kohen, I see, like, who got rachis a gaze. A certain person once brought him rachis a gaze, the a certain amount of the shearing of the wool, the Torah tells us in Parshas Shoftim, that's one of the 24 Matnas Kohanim. Omale, so there's sort of Shmuel asks the man, Mehecha at, where are you from? Omale Meduch Plan, he says, I'm from such and such a place. So Rabbi Shmuel asks him, I have a Kohen Lameisvele. What, from there until here, there was no Kohen you could have given it to? Why'd you come all the way here to give me this Rachis Hagez? So the man says, Dina Isli, because I have a Din Torah. Va'amina, and I figured, Agavor Choy, while I'm coming here anyhow, I see the Lamai, let me bring it to you, Rebbe. Again, Omalei Fasilna L'chol Adina, Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha says, I'm passing myself to judge your Din Torah. Loi Kabel Minei, and he didn't accept the Rachis Hagez from him. Again, he set up a pair of Tamen Chachamim to judge the case. Either, like Marashah says, it means two Tamen Chachamim together with himself, or it means two Tamen Chachamim without himself. And they're judging the case. Bahadi the cause of Osi, as he's walking around, Omar, he thinks to himself, this guy could make this argument or that argument. Omar, then he realizes Tipach Nafsham from a Kabbalah Sheikhar, the how disappointed and how in pain and agony should be the desires and the souls of those who receive Sheikhar, Umani Shalom Natalti, Madach I who didn't take the Natalti shall be Natalti, and even if I did take it would have been mine anyway, because as a Kohen I'm entitled to Rishas Agaz. And nevertheless, I'm still so biased in his favor. How much more so people who actually do take Sheikhan? Why do we need two stories? Just one reason is because one point would be because in the first one, he's not accomplishing a mitzvah by getting this fruit. It's from his orchard, but there's no mitzvah in taking it. The second one, he's helping the person accomplish a mitzvah of Rishas Hagez, and still we're saying that he wasn't going to accept it because of this. Okay, the Gemara continues with another story. Rav Onan Isile Ahu Gavra, a certain person brought to Rav Onan Kanta a basket de Gildoni de Bay Gili of Gildoni, which are a type of small fish de Bay Gili. Now, Bay Gili has a couple of different possibilities that the Mephoshim talk about. It can mean that Gili can mean reeds, so it means that these little fish that swim around the reeds near the shore, near the bank of the river. It can mean that they're the kind of small fish that are caught in reed baskets or reed traps or things like that. And it can also mean, the third possibility is Bay Gili is the name of a place. whatever the case, so this guy brought a basket of these fish to Rav Onan. Omale Maya Vidach, so Rav Onan asks him, what brings you here? Omale Dina Isli, and the man says, I have a Din Torah. Loi Kabo Minei, Rav Onan did not want to accept the fish from him. Amalei pasilna l'choladina. He says, I'm possible to judge your case because we have the problem of Sheikhan. Amalei, so the man says, Dine demar loy be'ina. You know what? Fine. I don't need you, Rebbe, to judge my case. Kabuli l'kabul mar, but Rebbe, I want you to at least accept the gift of the fish. I don't want that you, Rebbe, should prevent me from accomplishing the mitzvah of giving bikurim. Now, fish, of course, are not bikurim per se, bikurim are fruit. And this is long after the Churban, and Rav Onan is not a Kohen. But Detanya, this guy was a shtickle Tamid Chacham, he knew, it says in a Braisa, the Pasuk describes in Melachim, the ish ba mi baal shalisha, the Pasuk describes at one point, there was a famine going on in Eretz Yisrael, a man came from Baal Shalisha, a place in Eretz Yisrael, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, mentions actually that it's one of the places in Eretz Yisrael where the crops ripen first. He brought to the man of Hashem, he brought to Elisha as a present, lechem bikurim, bread of bikurim, estrim lechem sa'odim, 20 loaves of barley bread, v'charmel b'tzikloinoi, and fresh grain in tzikloinoi. There's two understandings of tzikloinoi. It can mean in their husks, in their shells. And it can also mean that it's wrapped up in his garment. Whatever the case, the man brought all of this. Now the posuk calls it lechem bikurim. So the question is, why bikurim? Elisha oichel bikurim. However, was Elisha eating bikurim? Now, how do we know that he wasn't? Rashi points out that Elisha was not a kohen. Bikurim can be eaten only by a kohen. Rashi points out, we find that a Gemara in Pesachim that identifies. Now Elisha's father's name was Shofat. When he's first introduced, and the Pasuk is introduced as Elisha ben Shofat, and a few times after that, it's also mentioned. We find the Divrei Yomim, where it lists the families of Shevet God, it mentions someone named Shofat, and the Gemara in Pesachim identifies that Shofat as the father of Elisha. So therefore, Elisha is from Shevet God. So he's not a Kohen. So therefore he can't be eating Bikurim. That's according to Rashi. Tosfos says, never mind that question. There's a better point. Elisha lived in the city of Shomron, which was the capital of the Aseret HaShevatim. Bikurim, even if Elisha was a Kohen, or even Eitz Yosef points out, conceivably among all his Talmidim, there might have been Kohenim. But nevertheless, they're living in the city of Shomron, which is in the kingdom of the Aseret HaShevatim, not in Yerushalayim. Bikurim can be eaten only in Yerushalayim. So that's another reason why it can't possibly mean Bikurim. Now, on one level, actually, Marsha refers to the relevant Gemara in Sanhedrin that says there is another meaning of the word Bikurim over here. It doesn't mean Bikurim as in what you bring to the Beis Mikdash. It means the first ripening, and the Gemara points out over there an interesting point. Again, Baal Shalisha, the Gemara points out over there, it was in Daf Yomi a few weeks ago. Baal Shalisha is an area in Eretz Yisrael where the crops ripen very quickly. Now, for them to be eating grain that had just grown, bread, grain, the fresh grain, the bread that was made from it and everything, it had to be after the Korban Omer was brought, because before the Korban Omer is brought, it's Chodosh and you're not allowed to eat it. Usually, at that point, if in the rest of Eretz Yisrael, maybe only the barley has ripened yet, and maybe the wheat is just getting to the stage of ripening, in Baal Shalisha, the crops grow a lot faster, so by that time, there should have been wheat available already. And instead, we're calling this Lechem Bikurim, the first ripened crop that was there was barley only, and that's why the guy's bringing barley bread and then fresh barley. Why not wheat? The Gemara explains over there that it means, in other words, it was really the spring hadn't come yet, and it was already Pesach. It was already after the second day of Pesach when they brought the Korban Omer. So, but it wasn't spring yet. We know Pesach is supposed to be in the spring. So what happened? That year, by rights, should have been a leap year. It should have been an Ibur year. They should have had an extra Adar. However, because it was a year of famine, as the Pesukim describe over there, therefore Elisha and his Beis Din did not make it a leap year, because the Gemara explains over there, you can't, in a year of famine like that, you don't want to make people have to wait a whole nother month before they can eat the new crop of Chodosh. So therefore, so in that case, the fact that the Pesuk calls it Bikurim is actually needed, Legufa, it's actually needed to tell us that point, to tell us that it should have been an Ibur year, but they didn't do one. Nonetheless, also, the Gemara is doubting from it. The fact that it calls it Bikurim is also the point that it means that the person is bringing it as Bikurim. So again, how is it Bikurim? First of all, Elisha's not a Kohen, and it's in Shomron, it's not in Yerushalayim. So Ella Loy Malach, so the man says, to Rav Anan, it comes to tell you, Kolam maybe dirt on the Tamid Chacham, anyone who brings a present to a Tamid Chacham, Kilo Makrav Bikurim, is as if he's offering Bikurim, because the Tamid Chacham is like a miniature base of Mikdash in itself. So the man says to Rav Anan, fine, I understand you didn't want to take the fish if you're going to be judging my case, because that would be out and out Shoychad, but I want you to take it anyway, just as Bikurim, so I have a mitzvah of giving Bikurim. Omalei, so Rav Onan tells him, you know what, until now I didn't want to accept it, because like in the previous stories, it's a form of Shoychad, hashta to amritli taima, but now you've given me a good reason, fine, makablinon, then fine, I'll accept the fish. Well, since Rav Onan himself can't judge him, Shadri l'kameid Rav Nachman. So instead, Rav Onan sent the man to go for a din Torah in front of Rav Nachman. And he sent him along with him. He sent him a message. Nidaine Meir Lahai Gavra, Rebbe, Reb Nachman, you judge this man. Da'ano Onan Pasilnu Leiladina. I, Onan, am possible to judge him. Now, he didn't specify why. Why is he possible to judge him? He didn't specify. So, Omar, so Reb Nachman gets this message. He thinks to himself, Mi de Sholach Li Hochi, since Reb Onan sent me a message like that, Shmamina Krivehu. That must mean, why is Rav Onan possible to judge him? Probably because he's Rav Onan's relative. Well, have a koyim dina, what's the nafkimina? Have a koyim dina de yasmi kameh. Now, Rav Nachman, at that point, had a din Torah involving Yisoimim that was in front of him, that was on his docket. Now, the usual rule is that a dayan has to deal with dinei Torah in the order that they come. So, but here, he thought to himself, and especially when there's Yisoimim involved, you want to take care of their case as soon as possible. Omar, but he thinks to himself, Hi Esa. Listen, you have an Esa to judge fairly, and that means also to judge the cases in the order in which they come, but you also have an Esa of honoring the Torah, because here here Rav Onan is here he's Rav Onan's relative, and therefore to give him honor would be to give honor to Rav Onan. So he thinks to himself, Esa to Kvod Torah Odif. In that case, Rav Nachman thinks to himself, the Esa that involves Kavod Torah should be more important. Therefore, this person's case should take precedence over any of the other cases, including the case of the Yosem. Marsha discusses over here actually that in the relevant Gemara in Sanhedrin in the first parak, it talks about that you have the famous idea that any case, no matter whether it's a tiny amount of money or a huge amount of money, has to be equally important to the dayan, and that means we go in the order in which they come to Beis Din. We don't say that the case involving the greater amount of money should go first. But here, the point is that the din involving the Yisoymim was already on his court calendar. But now he's thinking to override that and judge this person first because of covered Torah. Then he brings the Rambam holds that actually when you have a case involving Yisoymim, then that actually takes precedence over others. Usually, again, we say that it just goes in order in which the cases come to Beis Din, but the Rambam learns that there's an exception. Among the exceptions to that is a case involving a Yosim. So that gets to jump the line. But here Reb Nachman is thinking that Marsha explains it might be that this case of this man and a case involving Yisoymim came to Reb Nachman at the same time, and normally he would put the Yisoymim first, but now he's thinking because of Kavod HaTorah he should put this guy's case first. Well, so in any case, the point is that this guy got to jump the line a little bit. Sakina Ladina de Yasmi, said Rav Nachman, set aside the case involving the Yisoymim, v'achse ladina, and he brought forth the case involving this guy. He was able to jump the line. Kiven de Chazra Baldinre Yakra de Ka'ovidle. The problem was that now the Baldin, whom this person was arguing against, he saw the honor that Rav Nachman is giving to this person. Now, if this person was in fact a relative of Rav Onan, then the man wouldn't be bothered by that. He would realize, also, like Rav Nachman, that the covet of Torah comes first. But he knew this person is not a relative of Rav Onan, rather. He knew he's not a relative of Rav Onan, and there's no other particular reason why he should be put first. So therefore, he thought Rav Nachman is showing favoritism to the guy. Istater or istatem tanose. So the result was his tainus were closed up. He didn't have the self confidence to speak in Beis Din and give his arguments because he thought that Rav Nachman is biased in favor of the other guy. So that means, in other words, Rav Onan had indirectly caused this by giving a message to Rav Nachman that I'm possible to judge this person without clarifying why. The result was, the Gemara says, Rav Onan have a regular Eliyahu de Osi Gabe. Rav Onan used to regularly be visited by Eliyahu Anavi to have a masnili sidra de Eliyahu. And Eliyahu Anavi would teach Rav Onan sidra de Eliyahu. Now we have there's a medrash called Seder Eliyahu Rabba and Seder Eliyahu Zuta. Many Mephoshim explain that that's what the Gemara is referring to over here. The Seder that Eliyahu was teaching him is that Medrash. With that said, though, there is an explanation from a Mephoshim to Be'er Sheva later on in Sanhedrin, who says that no, when we have in the Gemara Tonet, well, so most Mephoshim also identify that with Tonet Dve Eliyahu. When we say, for example, in morning davening, Tonet Dve Eliyahu, Kol Hashana Halachos B'chol Yom, and other things, then it means it comes from that. The Be'er Sheva holds that not, actually. He holds that Tonet Dve Eliyahu is actually a collection of braises from a Chocham by the name of Eliyahu. But most of the other Mephoshim say it's identical with the Seder Eliyahu that we're talking about over here, and it means it was taught by Eliyahu Anavi. So anyway, so until now, Rav Onan would regularly have Eliyahu come and teach him the Seder Eliyahu. Kiven to Ovid Hochi, now that Rav Onan had done this and caused inadvertently that the judgment didn't come out fairly because the other person against the other Baal Din thought that Rav Nachman is unjustly favoring his opponent. And again, that was because Rav Onan had not clarified his message to Rav Nachman. So istalik. So Eliyahu left and wouldn't come back to learn with him. Oisiv v'tanisa. So Rav Onan started fasting. Ubar Rachman. He started davening for Rachmanis from the Eibishter that Eliyahu Anavi should return. But also, so sure enough, eventually Eliyahu returned. But ki also, but now when Eliyahu came, have a mivisle ba'usi. He would frighten him. So there was one explanation that Mefarshim give is that Eliyahu used to come to Rav Anan in the form of a person. Now he's coming to him in the form of a malach. So therefore, said Rav Anan, it's too much for Rav Anan to handle. For Ovid Tivusa, a different explanation actually. Some Mefarshim say Bo'use also means to daven, like the Aramaic word Bo'usa, which means a tefillah. So it can mean like you'd have to daven and you have to plead with him to learn with him again. Anyway, for Ovid Tivusa, sort of Onan had to make a box. Va'anche, and he put the box on the ground. The Yosef Tameh, and he would sit in front of him. In other words, from now on, when Eliyahu came to learn with Rav Onan would have to sit inside a box in order he couldn't actually see Eliyahu face to face because he'd be terrified of him. Ad apikle sidre, until eventually Eliyahu taught him everything, the entire seder that he was supposed to. V'hainu da'ami seder Eliyahu Rabba, seder Eliyahu Zutta. Thus, we have this medrash seder Eliyahu is divided into a greater part and a lesser part. So the greater part would be what he learned at the beginning when he was outside the box. The lesser part, Seder Eliyahu Zutta, would be what he had to learn when he was sitting inside the box there, frightened of Eliyahu. Tosfos points out, actually, that the Rabba, first of all, the Rabba, because the first one, it's a, well, so the simple meaning we would say is Rabba is what he learned outside, and Zutta, when it's small, is like crowded inside the box. But Tosfos points out, in fact, Seder Eliyahu Rabba is a lot longer than Seder Eliyahu Zutta. You look at them, they've been printed, your Seder Eliyahu Rabba is about four times as long as Seder Eliyahu Zutta. Marsha points out, really, you know, you look in this story, there are two things that Rav Onan lost. First, he lost for a while the ability to have Eliyahu teach him at all. And then he had that even when Eliyahu came back, you would have to sit inside the box. So the reason is, Maharsha says, when you think about it, Rav Onan did two things wrong in this story. First of all, yes, the man saying, I'm bringing you Bikurim. Nevertheless, with the other people, with Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yossi and with Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha, there was also an excuse why they should take it, because it's from his own orchard or because it's Reishis HaGeiz, and they still didn't take it. Rav Anan shouldn't have taken the fish either. Very nice. You want to do Bikurim? There's a lot of other Talmid Chachamim you could give it to. That's first of all. Second of all, the fact that he gave this unclear message to Rav Nachman and caused that the Din Torah came out wrongly. So therefore, so now he fasted, and that was mechaper for the first thing. He had eaten the fish that he wasn't supposed to, therefore it was mechaper for that by fasting instead. But now, what about the fact that the other person in that Din Torah had gotten scared, thinking that Rav Nachman is unjustly favoring his opponent, and therefore he couldn't speak properly? Because of that, Rav Onan himself was made to be frightened and scared and have to hide inside the box to learn from Eliyahu HaNavi. Ben Yehoyada says it a little differently. He gave an obscure message. He didn't say his message openly and clearly to Rav Nachman. I'm puzzled to judge this guy because he brought me these fish. Instead, therefore, he was made to have to, he can't learn openly in front of Eliyahu anymore, and he has to sit inside a closed up box, like the way he gave a closed message, an obscure message to Rav Nachman. We learned, by the way, earlier in the Masechta, we had a story involving the same Rav Onan, where he sent a message to Rav Huna, which Rav Huna thought was not derech eretzik enough, and we had a whole discussion about that. So we see from this story, Rav Onan was a very great tzaddik, that he is zoich to Gilel Eliyahu. Not very many people are. Nevertheless, though, we see from that story, from that earlier story, that Rav Huna had to tell him, you still need to know how to speak to a greater Talmid Chacham. The Gemara continues, speaking of the subject of Eliyahu, of Elisha, rather, and his Talmidim, that we said before, this guy brought Bikurim to Elisha. So now let's talk about another angle on that pasuk, another drosha that we can learn from it. B'shnei d'Rabbi Yosef have a rischa. In Rabbi Yosef's times, there was anger from Hashem. So there was a famine. Omru le Rabbanon le Rabbi Yosef. So the other Chacham asked Rabbi Yosef, Liboy ma rachmi. Rebbe, you should daven for Rachmanus from the Eibishter that the famine should be over. But he tells them we don't have enough schusim for it. Hashta, let's consider. Uma Elisha. Madach, consider Elisha. Dechiavu Rabbonon miftiri mikamei. When the Rabbonon, when his Talmidim would leave him to go home, you have to remember, in those times in the yeshivas, just like nowadays, you have full-time Talmidim who dorm there and are supported by the yeshiva. And then you have... And then you have Talmidim who come and go. You have day Talmidim, Talmidim who stay there for a day or a week or whatever, and then they go. So in Elisha's times and in Rabbi Yosef's times, it was similar. So Elisha had, so he would have thousands of Talmidim, but even when they left, when they would leave, the full-time Talmidim who would stay behind, Have a patient today alpha your mosan rabbanon. Now there would be 2,200 Talmidim left learning from Elisha constantly, as the Gemara is going to show soon how we get that figure of 2,200. And yet, Rabbi Yosef says, "Be'idan rischa." Nevertheless, when there was a time of anger from Hashem, there was a famine in Eretz Yisrael. Lo yhaba boi rachmi. Elisha was not davening for rachmanus from the Eibishter that the famine should be over. And we know he wasn't, because if he had, then for sure it would have been over. And then the pasuk doesn't mention any such thing. And no evi rachmi. Should I be able to daven for rachmanus? We don't have enough schusim. I don't have nearly as many talmidim as he did. Now, Marsha says, what kind of a question is that? You have all over the place in Masechta Tainus. You have many chachamim who daven when there's a famine, and then daven for rain. So Marsha makes a distinction like this. In Pirkei Avos, in Perek Hei, you have a distinction over there between Rav Shabbat Soras and Rav Shokloya. Rav Shabbat Soras means there's a drought, so therefore there's less grain and less produce than there usually is, and prices are high, but there's not an actual, the people aren't necessarily going hungry, per se. It's harder to buy food, but it's not so bad. As opposed to, then you have Rav Shokloya, where there's a complete lack of food and people are going to starve. So now, when there's a Rav Shokloya, then sure, you daven for Rachmanos and you plead with the Eibush to bring rain. Those are all the kinds in Tainus, says Marsha, were that kind of famine. Here we're talking about, it's just a Rav Shabbat Sirdus. There's not as much rain as there usually is, so therefore prices are higher than normal. But so the only reason to daven would be because the Talmidim are having a hard time making ends meet. They can't afford food as much as they usually would. So therefore, Rabbi Yosef says, for that, that's not necessarily a reason to daven unless we have greater schusim than Elisha did, and we see that Elisha didn't have those schusim, and therefore we shouldn't either. So that's his argument, in other words. How do we know that that's the number of Talmidim who were left in Elisha's Beis Medrash when all the part-time Talmidim went home, then the full-time Talmidim who stayed were 2,200? Dichtiv, because we have the continuation that we quoted before the Pasuk about this man who brought to Elisha a gift of food. And now the pasuk continues. Vayomer Meshorsoi, Elisha's Meshores, his attendant, said, "Ma eten ze lifnei mea ish? What should I put this food in front of 100 people? How is it going to be enough for them?" Now, what do you mean, my lifnei mea ish? What do you mean, in front of 100 people? Ilema de kulu lifnei mea ish? Do you mean that the entire thing? Now let's look at the pasuk again. It said that the man brought lechem bikurim, bread of bikurim, which we said was bikurim in the sense that because he's giving a gift to the Talmid Chacham, estrim lechem sa'odim, 20 loaves of barley bread, v'chamel b'tzikloina, and fresh grain in its husks, or wrapped up in his clothing. So the Gemara is understanding that each of these represents a different thing. So the lechem bikurim is one loaf of bread, the estrim lechem sa'odim is another 20, so that's 21, and the chamel b'tzikloina is a bag full of fresh grain. So you have to ask, so what is the Meshoris wondering, how is this going to feed 100 people? What's the problem? In years of famine, that would be a fortune of food. No reason that the guy should wonder how it's going to feed 100 Talmidim. Evidently, what the man meant, what the Meshoris meant, is how can you expect me to put each one of these 22 things in front of 100 people? So therefore, we see there were 2,200 Talmidim. There's 22 items that the man brought, and 100 Talmidim. So there are 2,200 Talmidim. So the Meshoras is asking, how are these 22 things going to feed 2,200 Talmidim? And Elisha tells him, by the way, don't worry. Elisha tells him, "Koyam Hashem, ochol v'hoyser." You'll see, people will eat from it, and they'll even leave some over because they'll be so full. And sure enough, it was. It's mentioned in the Pesukim over there as one of the 16 nisim that Elisha accomplished. That Elisha accomplished is that the small amount of food fed a huge number of people. Anyway, so we see from that Elisha had 2,200 full-time Talmidim, because B'Pashtus, we would understand, who are the ones that the food is going to have to be given to? The ones who are only part-timers, the ones who support themselves. The Meshoras wouldn't be asking, how can we feed them with this food? We would tell them, listen, it's a Shnas Batzoras, it's a year of, it's years of famine, food is tight, go home and get food, and get your own food. So we have to understand that it means the full-time Talmidim numbered 2,200. Well, the Gemara continues. When the part-time Talmidim would leave Rav's yeshiva, have a paishi alfo mosin rabbanon. There would be 1,200 full-time Talmidim left. And by the way, Maharshal points out this is why we have the Lashon, the Mishora says Ma'atin Zeh Lifnei Me'ah Ish. If it meant all the 22 things together, he would say Ma'atin Elu. So it means each of these individual things had to feed 100 people. Okay, so we're saying that Rav had 1,200 full-time Talmidim, Mibei Rav Huna, in the next generation, when they left the yeshiva of Rav Huna and the full-time Talmidim stayed, Havu Paishi Tamni Me'er Rabbanon. You would have 800 Talmidim left. Now, the Gemara continues, Rav Huna have a Dorish B'Tleis Amiroi. Rav Huna had such large crowds of Talmidim by his Shiurim that he would have 13 Amiroim. Now the Rosh Hashiva in those days wouldn't necessarily speak loud enough for everybody to hear and clearly enough and explain enough for everybody to hear. He would have an Amora in front of him whose job would be to say it loudly and explain it to repeat it loudly and to explain it more clearly. There was such a large crowd by Rav Huna's Shiurim that you had to have 13 such amiroim. When the Talmid Chachamim would get up from Rav Huna's Beis Medrash, now they would sit on the floor, and the floors were dirt. The Naftzi Glimaihu, and they would shake out their clothing from the dust. Have a solik avka v'chassila liyoma. There would be such a cloud of dust coming up from that the sun would be covered up. The sun would be dimmed by it. So much so that they could see it all the way in Eretz Yisrael. But Amri Marava, so they would say in the west, meaning in Eretz Yisrael, Komulei Memesivted at Rav Huna Bavla. Oh, they must have just gotten up from Rav Huna's Beis Medrash in Bavel, and that's this dust cloud that we see. Now, what does that mean? Are they physically able to see a dust cloud from Bavel hundreds of miles away in Eretz Yisrael? Ben Yoda says that they were saying it as kind of like a figure of speech, as like a joke. Whenever there was a big dust cloud that they would see from a windstorm or whatever, they would say, you know what, this is the kind of dust cloud they must have in Bavel when Rav Huna's Beis Medrash gets up. On the other hand, Maharsha says that there's a symbolism in it. The clothes of the Talmid Chachamim, of the Tzaddikim, represent their Midas Tovus. The dust on them represents, the same way as we have the concept of Avak Lashon Hara and Avak Gezel and things like that, the same way we have the Avak of their Midas Tovus, the dust of their good Midas. So we're saying even that dust, even the not their actual Midas Tovus themselves, but just like the dust, the secondary thing of it, that's powerful enough to counteract the power of the Goyim. The sun represents the power of the Goyim. As we know, they count their calendar according to the sun, whereas we count our months according to the moon. So the dust cloud covering the sun symbolized the point that even the avak, even the dust of the Midas Tovus of Rav Huna's Talmidim would be enough to counteract the power of the Goyim. Maharsha mentions also in this connection when we have in Pirkei Avos the heavy misabik by far aglehem means sit in the dust by their feet, means take on even the dust of their Midas Tovus. So the Gemara continues, Kimifti Rabbanan Mibei Rabba v'Rabbi Yosef. In the next generation, when the full-time Talmidim would leave the yeshiva of Rabba and Rabbi Yosef, Havu Paishi Arba Mei Rabbanan. There would be left 400 Chachamim. V'Korul Anafshayu Yasmi, they called themselves the orphans, like compared to the previous generations. Only two generations ago, in the time of Rab, there were 1,200 full-time Talmidim, and the previous generation of Huna, there were 800, and now we're down to 400, so we're like Yisoyim compared to them. Ki Havu Mifti Rabbanan Mibei Abaya. When they would leave the yeshiva of Abaya, Va'amilam Be'er Papa, others say from the yeshiva of Rapapa, Va'amilam Be'er Rav Ashi, or others say yet from the yeshiva of Rav Ashi. So those are three generations in a row. Rav Ashi's Talmud was Rapapa, and one of Rapapa's Talmud was Rav Ashi. Havu Paishi Mosan Rabbanon. There would be left only 200 Talmud Chachamim. V'korolam Shai Yasmi di Yasmi. They called themselves the orphans of the orphans. The Rambam, by the way, mentions that. In the times of the Gemara, we see from this Gemara and from other similar Gemaras, they would have tens of thousands of people crowding the yeshivas. Then the Rambam describes after the Chasimah said Gemara, then you really don't have that anymore. You really have there was a tremendous descent in the level of learning, and you don't have thousands of people coming to a Beis Medrash. Nowadays, you have certain Bate Medrash in the world where you have 1,500 or so Talmidim, and it's considered to be a gigantic Beis Medrash. But we're saying compared to what they had back then, it's not really very much. All right, Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Gu'ula, Chof Gimel Tevis. The Alter Rebbe explains in Torah Ur at the end of Parashas Vayigash that nowadays we daven Shemoneh Esrei quietly. That's because nowadays Nukva, the Nekeva, is Makabel, not Mashpia. But La'osid Lovei, when the Nekeva, the Makabel, is going to be on the same level as the Mashpia, then Shemoneh Esrei will say out loud. That's what it means when we say in the Pasuk, Kiro Kala. Now, the Rebbe talks about it in a sichah, Tzorech Iyun. The Zohar explains the whole concept of tefillah b'lachash is because that's what tefillah is all about. It's the bittul b'mitzius, and that's really what Shemona Esrei connected Olam Atzilus is about, is that bittul. So how could it be that in the future it's going to be b'kil rum? Isn't that the opposite of bittul? So the next installment, which is supposed to be for tomorrow, but we'll summarize it now, is that then la'asid lave, the bittul will be in such a shlemus, that even the boser itself, nigla kvaro kol boser yachtav, ki pi Hashem dibber, so our flesh itself will see a lakus. So that means, in other words, so that therefore we don't need, so then that way we'll be able to have the bittul, we'll see the greatness of the maila of bittul without actually needing to whisper our tefillah. We started talking yesterday about amirul akum, and we said some basic categories in it. So now. So one example, first of all, is that if a person sees that he's about to lose something, he's about to have a significant financial loss. So then he's allowed to call a goy there and not to tell him to fix it, but just the goy himself will realize. And that would be even with a malacha gemura. The yid can't give him any kind of remez. All he can do is bring the goy there and the goy will realize it for himself. Now, one thing you can say is you can tell him, if you save this, then you won't lose out. But that would only be, for example, the Mishnah mentions it, for example, a connection with a fire breaks out on Shabbos, you're allowed to we talked about before, about fires where nowadays often you are allowed to call the fire department anyhow because there can be pekuach nefesh involved, but even when there's not and you yourself are not allowed to put out the fire, you can still tell, or you can still call a goy over there and tell him that you won't lose out if you save things over here. But that's only allowed by Hefs and Merubah.